You guys ready?
Yeah.
Bah, 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 bah. A La Jolla man clings to life. Bumblebee, bumblebee, bumblebee.
Feels so good when it touches the lips.
Scotch, 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 scotch.
I love scotch. Scotch, 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 scotch.
Mr. Speaker.
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for setting your podcast down to 14th and G, because it is fight night here in the red trunks, weighing in at well over 100 pounds and standing somewhat over 5 feet tall. He's the Republican, the Bethesda brawler, Bruce Melman, here in the blue trunks, weighing in at a little bit more, standing just a little taller. He is the chubby cheek charger of Chevy Chase, Democrat David Thomas. Bruce, DT, welcome to 14th and G.
I had no idea this was going to be the thriller in vanilla.
Well, I mean, come on. We've all got 1 foot out the door. We're headed out for Thanksgiving. But I had to start with the way Congress left town last week. And thank God they got out of town, because the fights were breaking out all over the Capitol Hill. You had former Speaker Kevin McCarthy elbowing poor Congressman Burchett in the kidneys. He's still feeling it in the kidneys. You had Chairman Comer at the Oversight Committee referring to a very smurfly dressed Jared Moskowitz as a smurf. But I think Senator Mark Wayne Mullen took the cake when he stood up in the hearing and challenged his witness, the head of the Teamsters Union, to an actual fist fight and made clear he's not afraid to bite.
Thank goodness there are no canes anymore, because Charles Sumner leapt to mind.
Yeah.
How embarrassing. I think
Bernie Sanders is the voice of reason.
Bernie Sanders had to remind him, you are a United States senator. And I know a lot of people said, well, they'd been at work for several weeks in a row. I imagine the rest of the America that has to work every day and sometimes works with people that perhaps they don't see eye to eye with or like very much. You don't get in fist fights. You don't push people in the back. You don't hit them in the kidneys. These people have lost their mind. It's very disillusioning.
I mean,
you want to take that outside?
Well, there's bad behavior all over the Hill. I mean, Congressman Bowman and the fire alarm, which he pled guilty to last week. Look, these guys were in session because of the Republicans' inability to elect a speaker. These guys were in session for nearly 10 weeks straight. But was it that, or is there more going on? I mean, is this symptomatic of where we are?
We didn't give enough recess, and so they got in fights. I mean, that feels to me very elementary school. Look, how long has it been since most Americans would tell their children to behave more like elected leaders? By contrast, these days, I don't care what the president of the United States did. Mister, you better behave.
Well, they got something very important done. I cannot remember the last time we got to this point in the year. And we weren't facing at least the potential of a fiscal crisis, a government funding crisis. Congress has gotten government funded. They haven't passed all of fiscal year 24 yet, but they at least got government funding into 2024. We have two CR deadlines now, one set of appropriations.
Doesn't it feel like a 15-yard punt on third down, though?
Kind of. One set to expire January 9th. The other set to expire February 2nd. Congress is coming back after Thanksgiving for at least a couple of weeks, maybe as long as 3 weeks. What are they going to get done? We don't have a fiscal crisis to deal with. What are we going to do ahead of the new year?
Well, there are things that have to get done, and so that's what they'll come back and do. Number one, the annual defense bill, the NDAA, that gets done every year. I suspect it will. This deal will be no different, and the House and Senate just need to reconcile their versions. So I think that is a very good chance of getting done this year. Secondly, Senator Schumer has led the way in saying, we need to get the president's emergency supplemental appropriations request for foreign aid done this year, and that would support Ukraine. It would support Israel. It would support Taiwan and possibly deal with the situation at our southern border. So that is something that the Senate has said they would like to get done. Both Senator Schumer and McConnell have said they want to get that piece of legislation done. The question is, if they get it done, what does the House do? That remains unclear. There are also some year-end things. One I'm watching very closely is the FAA bill, which does need to be extended or an authorization done. The House and Senate have been working on those bills all year. It's probably time to wrap that up. We'll see if they can get it done before the end of the year.
Yeah, it seems to me a lot of the oxygen is going to be taken up by this fight over the foreign supplemental. The House has already passed a standalone Israel aid bill. But of course, both Majority Leader Schumer and Republican Leader McConnell want all the funding buckets tied together. That's aid to Israel, that's aid to Ukraine, Taiwan. And it sounds like the key to turning that in the Senate, at least, is not just more funding for border processing, but actual changes to border policy or asylum laws.
Yes.
And then, you know, to your point, DT, God only knows what the House is going to do with that. I mean, you're already seeing the Freedom Caucus. They have a very stringent border bill, which was H.R. 2, the second bill they introduced in this Congress. You're already seeing Chip Roy and others say anything below H.R. 2 is dead on arrival in the House.
Under normal circumstances, you could see a deal coming together here, but we are not living in normal times. It is unclear whether a deal can be reached between the House, really the House Republicans and everybody else, to not just deal with something like the border, but right after the holidays, we'll be right back where we are with a funding fight on the 19th and the 2nd. So now we have a staggered CR approach going forward here. Nothing has changed. And the House was unable to move their appropriations bills that they have been trying to do under Speaker McCarthy and now Speaker Mike Johnson. They're not getting done. The margins are too close. And so at some point that will come to a head. The question is, will we have a shutdown? Will we get punted again? Or will the Republicans kick out Mike Johnson and find another speaker in their ranks? Well, that's the situation.
To be fair, Speaker Johnson is the establishment figure at this point because he has been checks watched 8 seconds as the speaker. It is kind of funny that, you know, people like Chip Roy have said, you know, he has 2 strikes. I mean, the guy literally just got called up to the major leagues. But, you know, for the spending stuff aside on the supplemental, it's not unusual. In fact, the founders designed a system predicated on compromise. The House R's are ready to do Israel. The White House, the Senate says you don't get Israel unless you give us Ukraine. Republicans, both in the Senate and the House, say you want Ukraine, you give us border. In theory, one could envision a package, as ugly as it feels being put together, where everybody's top priority gets a piece of it, maybe not 100%, but in the end, you fund Israel, you fund Ukraine, and you deal with the border, which, you know, the ugliness of rhetoric often aside, we have a historic challenge of more refugees coming over the border than at any point. Our economy is drawing people from all around the world, and we're simply not controlling the border. That is a major concern for voters, especially in the middle of independent and swing voters.
You know, and I'll say this, when it comes to foreign supplemental, when it comes to funding the government, you put these things on the floor of the Senate and you put these things on the floor of the House, and they've got nearly 75% support, bipartisan support, in each chamber. And you guys made fun of me a couple of weeks ago, but I'm gonna say it again. I think the idea that shutdowns equal leverage is becoming dead letter in the Republican caucus, in the House Republican caucus. I'm not saying it's extinct. McCarthy set himself on fire not to shut the government down. Johnson got it done. It's sort of an odd approach, but he did what he had to do to keep the government funded.
All I say is we'll see, Dean. We will see.
We will see. 2 strikes. I mean, that's hilarious. Well, speaking of foreign aid, one key piece of that is Taiwan. Another remarkable thing, another year-end miracle. Not only are we not dealing with a funding fight here at the end of the year, but Governor Gavin Newsom and the Democrats in California cleaned up San Francisco for the arrival of Chinese Premier Xi, who arrived for the APEC Asia-Pacific Summit and had a little tete-a-tete with Biden. it seems like the Chinese are desirous of, both sides really, desirous of bringing down the tensions. We've had skirmishes on the very outer edges between our naval forces and our air forces. And it seems like both sides have sort of looked over the abyss and said, why don't we tone things down?
Yeah, look, the second Cold War has not been canceled. But as with the first, these things go from a hotter to cooler. And for their own domestic political reasons and economic reasons, I think President Xi in China realizes the epic drop in foreign investment is really bad. They're going through a huge property bubble. They need to make a little bit nicer. They need more access to technology. So he came bearing gifts, as it were, and at least in this very short term, trying to make nicer than we've seen China make under President Xi for over 5, if not 10 years. They've been more aggressive and more repressive. So I'm not ready to buy on this signal, although it's better than the alternative. At the same time, the United States, we're focused on Ukraine with you know, ongoing need for supplies, but diminishing patience among American and others in the West. We're trying to support our ally in the Middle East, Israel, with nobody in the rest of the world seemingly on the same side. That's taking a lot of time, a lot of attention, a lot of focus. And then number three, there are many in the defense community who say we're not ready, whether it's to defend Taiwan or to go toe-to-toe, which, of course, we don't want to with China. But if we can buy time to strengthen the military-industrial base, if we can buy time to invent and deploy newer technologies that would help both Taiwan defend itself but help us fight 21st century wars and have the military-industrial base that we need, we'll take the time. Seeing a bit of detente is better than being pretty confident the missiles are about to start flying. But I don't think any policymaker, not Republican, not Democrat, not on the Hill, not in the administration, says peace in our time.
I agree with everything you said there, Bruce. I think that is, I don't want to
reach. You never agree with everything.
No, I know. How about this? No, but I do think it was a good meeting. It's a necessary meeting. It's what a responsible president of the United States should be doing. To cool the tensions here, it is certainly does not solve every problem we have with China, and that was not the goal going into this. But I'm relieved that the pressure seems to be dialed back just a little bit, and maybe we get some pandas back.
Well, and look, Secretary Blinken's base at the moment when President Biden once again said, "Sure, he's a dictator," although I don't know how he was going to answer that. But the moment that comedy everybody else has captured of Secretary Blinken's face was almost worth the entirety of the meeting.
I think it needs like a rubber band on his wrist or something to control his facial expression. Maybe. The great spy balloon crisis was, what, 6 months ago?
Don't say it was overblown.
We shall see. It seems to me the Chinese are in a spot of weakness and they're stalling for time.
Well, stalling for time or playing for time. You know, they may also say, all right, how's American strength going to be over the next year? I mean, one of Putin's classic mistakes in Ukraine was, why did he go in when he went in? I assume he thought after our shambolic departure from Afghanistan that we weren't going to do what we did. But to the credit of the administration, we put the NATO band back together and kind of kicked the Russians' ass, at least in the early innings of that war. If you're President Xi, are we going to be more or less divided in 2024?
Right.
You got time, and since you need a little bit of stuff, that's why I think it's really important. I don't think the business community is going to say, "Oh, okay, let's not worry about having a more resilient supply chain." You know, the happy days are here again. People are happy because the alternative to friendlier times is scarier times. But I don't think it changes the direction of policy, neither business policy nor government.
Okay, boys, we've eaten our vegetables, we've had our dinner. It's time for pumpkin pie. Elections. The picture of the 2024 elections is coming into clearer focus. Let's start on the House side, where we've seen a slew of retirements. I've got 30 announced retirements, which is, look, we're sailing into the even-numbered year. It's a presidential election year, into the second session of the Congress. This is about the time people start to raise their hand and say, "I'm tapping out." We've seen a few surprises. Kay Granger, the chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee on the Republican side. Dan Kildee, a pretty well-regarded moderate member on the Democratic side. I'm not going to go through the whole list here. I've got 20 Democrats and 10 Republicans that have announced retirement. DT, what do you make of these retirements on the House side? Out of line in terms of who they are and the numbers, or pretty much what you would expect?
I don't think it's necessarily out of line. This is the time that you do expect if retirements are going to come. They generally come at the end of the first year. So no huge surprises, I guess, in the numbers at least. Now, there are more Dems that are retiring than Republicans at this point. We'll see if that number comes more into balance here. Generally, you don't want to retire when you think you're going to get your gavels back. So that's a little bit off kilter there for the Dems. But look, guy like Derek Kilmer is a young guy and a bright rising star. I'm sorry to see him step down and hope there's a future for him in public service somewhere else. Dan Kildee, I'm going to miss the hell out of that guy. Boy, he's a decent fellow. The one that is rumored right now, she hasn't said anything, but it's starting to be reported in the press, is Anna Eshoo, who I absolutely think the world of. I think she is, when you look at Silicon Valley today, it is not an exaggeration to say it wouldn't be the way it is without the leadership she's shown in the tech policy space, and she's just delightful. So I hope she's not retiring. If she's listening in, think again, but if she does, boy, hats off to her.
Well, it's almost impossible to say who is going to have the gavels next Congress. I think the Republican majority is down to 3 seats.
You're right. I left out the biggest retirement of all. George Santos has announced he's not running again. But of course, when we get back, he may be forced into retirement when the House takes up a resolution to kick him out of Congress.
Is he not running again, or is he not running again as George Santos?
Under rebranding. I'm not going to take the Santos bait. Instead, I'm going to pivot over to the Senate side, where we had some very big news last week when Senator Joe Manchin, not unexpectedly, announced his retirement. It's really hard to see him getting over the hump in West Virginia, but it really puts all the focus on Ohio, Montana, and Arizona for the Democrats to hold all their seats to retain the Senate majority.
Did I mention George Santos is retiring?
I haven't even gotten to Senator Manchin's proposed presidential campaign.
And Santos has done a lot for Long Island, so I'm hoping he'll reconsider as well. Santos. Senator Manchin has announced he's stepping down. That is going to be a heck of a tough seat for Dems to hang on to.
That's not going to happen. You've got no fouls to give, though. The whole rest of the board, you got to run the table.
You got to run the traps here. But this is one of the things I'm thankful for this year is that in states that are very red, we have very good Democrats who know how to win. Sherrod Brown has won in Ohio year after year after year. Senator Tester has done the same thing out in Montana. These are Democrats who are authentic. That is why they win. You look at John Tester and the guy looks like the state of Montana. Under any normal circumstances, you would say a Democrat doesn't have any business holding that seat, or Sherrod Brown in Ohio. I think both of them come back.
Although it has a bit of a Heitkamp Landrieu feel. I mean, sometimes there are years where even people who, and I agree with you, Senator Tester has done a good job of being authentic out there, but we're seeing so few ticket splitters who vote differently between presidential and Senate. If the R's can get a non-Dr. Oz, non-Herschel Walker candidate out there, it's going to be a tough one for the Democrats.
Well, look, so much of how the House and Senate elections shake out is going to be guided by the top of the ticket. We are sailing towards what looks like a total rematch of Biden v. Trump. Who knows? President Biden just turned 81 years old this week. He has gotten some awful polling numbers. He's losing to Trump by single digits, and I think Nikki Haley by double digits. Just looking at the president's reelect, I watch Governor Newsom going over to China and getting himself photographed with President Xi, sort of burnishing the credentials. And then you got the Obama people, David Axelrod and former President Obama himself, who do not seem inclined to throw their former vice president any sort of a lifeline.
You know, to your larger question here, is Joe Biden going to be the nominee? Yes. Like, get used to it. The good news is for the president is that the election is a year away. He's got a year to get his message out. He's got a ton to run on. Great legislative record. Restoring the relationship with our allies around the world, defending democracy at home and abroad. I think when Americans start to focus on the record that he has run with, particularly versus what President Trump is offering, which is, in his words, a retribution campaign that he would have in office here, I think hopefully most Americans are going to say, like, you know what, I'll take Uncle Joe for another 4.
Well, before we get out of here, it is Thanksgiving. So let's talk about what we're thankful for. What are we thankful for in terms of America and our political system? And I'll just say, I'm getting a little tired of the hand-wringing over the future of democracy. I don't see it. We are bigger and better than any one person. And so I'm thankful for the resilience of the American system. It has proven itself resilient, and I think it will continue to prove itself resilient no matter who wins the next election. Bruce, how about you?
I like that. I got three. So one, I'm thankful that we seem to see a bit of a repudiation of the faculty lounge. Campus celebrations of the Hamas terrorist attack have caused a lot of people to say, yeah, maybe these guys don't have the beating heart of the country in their rhetoric. Number two, I'm happy that Nikki Haley is kind of hit her stride again. I'd seen this in her capabilities before, and I like an alternative. I like a competitive primary, and I like an alternative to 4 more years of Trumpism. And then you made the point, the streets of San Francisco could be cleaned up. I'm hoping they stay cleaned up, and I sure as hell hope that Washington, D.C. gets the memo, because we're averaging more than 3 carjackings a day in the nation's capital. That is egregious and should not be the case.
The crime in this city is brutal.
DP? I'll try to end on a more positive note here, but I don't disagree with anything Bruce just said there. I am thankful for the Carters, and here is why. A life in public service, showing the ability to have, sort of rise up after a defeat and have a great second act, and a marriage that lasted 77 years. Boy, if that's not something to look up to and to aspire to, I don't know what does. So hats off to and Jimmy Carter just keeps on ticking. I mean, what a guy. I think I'm so pleased that as we get to what is likely the end of a very long life, that I think people can appreciate him for he and his wife and all they've accomplished.
And one more here. Our producer, Veer Shah. Veer,
yay,
get up here. Tell us what you're thankful for. Veer puts up and posts the 14th and G podcast every time we cut it, puts all the distribution together. And I'm thankful for you, Veer, and all the work you do.
Well, hey, thanks, Dean, for letting me step in here. I think I'm going to follow suit with TT and go on a lighter note. A, I'm thankful for the pandas coming back. I think we all are. And two, I got to give a shout out to my boys in Detroit, the Detroit Lions. 8-2 for the first time since 1962.
Wow.
I mean, come on now. That's something to be thankful.
Like George Plimpton era, 1962. Wow.
Around that era.
Will they play Thanksgiving Day? But I am thankful for all of you, Bruce Melman, David Thomas, Veer Shah. Thank you for joining me on 14th and G.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine, or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.